and welcome to today's edition of the Impact Room. I'm Michelle Ansell, Managing Partner of Douglas Jackson. Today, I am delighted to be joined by Oki Elozu. I'll get his name right. Oki is a board-level executive advisor and founder, CEO of Elevate Colour. He's recently left Many Pets, the double unicorn, multi-award-winning insurance and fintech startup, which used social media to disrupt insurance distribution, where he was the UK CEO. And Oki is also a role model. He's an advocate across DE&I and wants to achieve greater representation for people of colour in all levels of leadership. He's also very passionate about customer experience, as well as the author of the book, The Cult of Service Excellence. Oki, hi. Lovely to see you and have you here today. Thank you.
Great. Thanks for inviting me. It's good to be here.
Yeah. Fabulous. So let's get into this. So as we mentioned, Oki, you've recently completed your stint with Many Pets and sort of mm-hmm. ending as CEO of the UK business there. They were an insurance unicorn brand. What were some of the key elements you feel that allowed you to drive forward that business and impact the growth at the other scaling businesses, COOs and entrepreneurs could learn from?
Yeah. I think what was really amazing, I was there for almost 8 years, and I'll never forget when I first spoke to Stephen, who was the CEO then, just thinking about, first of all, the idea, and secondly, the opportunity to do something different, but slightly the same, but We use this word, especially in the early days, a lot better. Our vision was back then better insurance for everyone. And when we said better, we thought better was literally it will be better experience for the customers. You know, better price, better product, better service, right? And then when we deliver the service, we'll be 20% better at every stage than anyone else. And so this whole better thing, and then for everyone used to sort of say, do you think everyone's going to be your customers? And we said, no, we don't think that everyone's going to be our customers. We believed if we could do something that was really good, eventually everyone would copy us, and therefore everybody would benefit because we would do something and then everyone would copy. And there are a few examples of where that actually came to fruition around the pet insurance, for example. Video vets really were kind of around a little bit, but when we found First Vet in Sweden and then we brought it back to the UK and this added it to our product for free, customers thought it was amazing. Now 3 years later, you pretty much get it with every insurance policy. So that was better for everyone's benefited from the fact that we did something different. So try and build the insurance company that certainly I'd like to work at and certainly buy products from, and this laser focus on customers right at the heart of it.
Yeah, and I think that's obviously something we'll talk about a little bit more, but it's so important. And I think, we've obviously spoken over the years around customer and customer experience. And as I said, you've got a real passion for that. And I guess, what about the employee side? Because you also were quite different, weren't you? Do you think in that respect, I think you had a different sort of approach, I would have said, even before, you know, obviously what we went through and the remote first and all of that. What would you say to that, Oki?
Yeah, 100%, right? So I'd worked at big organisations and it's great. And I loved everywhere at Legal & General and Peru and Bupa and Sainsbury's. And I've learned something for every single one of those as I went into to doing Many Pets. But the thing I learned more than anything else is that, you know, is the inverted triangle, you know, which is that, organisations where the CEO's at the top and all the guys talking to customers at the bottom. We've all heard it before. If you flip it, the CEO's at the bottom and the whole organisation is there to support the people who talk to customers. And actually, when you start a business yourself, you can actually make it like that. You can say, you guys are the most important thing for us, and they don't believe you. And, you know, I interviewed the first 150 people to join the operations part of the business, all of them. Right, second interviews at least. And I remember, you know, people who were going to be customer service agents for us were like, "You're the CEO. Why are you doing an interview with us?" And I'd say it's because there's nothing more important than the people that will be serving our customers. And so this is always going to be a good use of time. And it only really stopped when my diary was making the recruitment slow down. That's the only reason I stopped. So, you know, at ManyPets, we were really all about the people who served the customers and making sure that we could try and make their life as happy, fun and useful as we can, because they would pass that on to the customers, and they did. And that's where a lot of that came from.
Excellent. Thank you. And sort of, you know, I'd be interested in your thoughts, because obviously when you've got something from a ground, the building it from the ground up, sometimes it's a bit easier, isn't it, than like, you know, when you're working for those big businesses and brands, you've got all this legacy, you know, and it does seem that businesses really struggle with customer experience. And I mean, you know, when you look at why you think most companies might go wrong delivering exceptional CX, what would you sort of put that down to?
First, I would put it down to they're not trying to deliver exceptional customer experience. Mm. They're just not, right? And so because when we use the term customer excellence, and but when you think of excellence, it's really right at the top. It's the best of the best, right? And if you really want to be the best of the best, you have to do a lot of stuff to make that happen. So people say they want to be there, but they don't really. They don't really want to get the best people. They don't really want to pay the money for the best people. They don't want to make their lives difficult to make it easier for customers. They don't want to have more people than they need so the customer gets a great. So they don't want any of that stuff, right? And so in their head, they think they want it, but actually they really don't. And do you know what? That's okay, right? It's not everybody has to be the best with customers, right? I think people should be good with customers, but not every company has to be the best, right? And actually, there's so many different ways of being the best with customers, but you almost have to leave something on the table in order to do it. So you don't have to be the best. No, I think the actual problem is there are now too many companies who aren't even in that space now. They're like, can we be good enough? Right? Good enough is the bar they want. So you've got companies who see it as a strategic imperative and their way of differentiating themselves from the opposition. Tick, right? They're at the top end. And then almost at the bottom end are people that think almost, and no one will admit to this, by the way, can we just do enough? Because we've got a load of other things to do. And that's the reality of running a business. There are so many things for us to do. Yeah. As long as the customer can pretty much get what they need, broadly speaking, that's good enough for us. And that sort of sets this incredibly low bar. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, I think that's prevalent. And I think that's really been prevalent during the last 18 months, and no one's immune from that too. Even, you know, I would say even at ManyPets, you know, it's been super hard, but the last 18 months have been very difficult for businesses, and what they took to do really cut back, and sometimes service is one of the things that suffers as a result.
Yeah, it's so true. I mean, I just posted before we sort of came on to this about I was having a conversation with a sort of, you know, global director of customer experience, and they were sort of saying about how they weren't able to get things done that they know they could do, you know, just because, as you say, the appetite wasn't there whilst they'd put in this what was effectively a token role, really, to appease or show the customers that they've got this person, you know, because of the silos and their lack of ability to or interest of change. You know, they'd even gone to the CEO and said, look, I can do so much more. I just need, you know, and they said, just take it easy. And yet, you know, we're paying these people, you know, 150K plus, you know, maybe a little bit less, but, you know, average 150 plus a year to what? Take it easy. And the talent is frustrated. The customers are frustrated, and the business probably are frustrated as well, because they're not getting the results that they want. You know, it's madness, isn't it?
It is madness. And it's because they don't really mean it. And then, I mean, I've been asked so many times, okay, how can we influence the senior people in our business by CX professionals to be customer focused? And my answer to them is, if they're not customer focused, you should find a new job. Yeah. Right. Because the chances are they're not going to be influenced by it. Right. Everyone knows that being good with customers is an option. And if you're choosing not to make that option, I mean, you're not going to have that option. And yet, so I do feel sorry for some of these people in those sort of roles where actually the organization is not aligned behind them. Because being good with customer experience is hard. It's really, really hard. You know, I use this term easy, right? It's one of the key, it's my number one term for customers. Make it easy for the customer, yeah. Right? And I was with another organization just a few weeks ago. I said, what that might mean in the short term is that you make it hard for yourselves in order to make it easy for the customer. But most organizations are spending so much time making it easy for themselves, yeah. Right? Because they want to cut down the amount of people they've got or whatever. They're making it harder for the customer. Yeah. And that's the reality of the situation we're in.
And I think the point that you made, you know, the thing is, to be the best, you can, 100% of the market can't be the best, can they? There's only one or the top 1% or the top 10%. And as you say, I think if just the businesses could be more honest and open, you know, they'd probably hire the better talent for them, you know, and have better employee relationships as well as, you know, perhaps the best customer. Because, you know, customers, we all go on EasyJet, right? You know, we know it's not going to be a great experience. I'd rather be on Virgin Atlantic and turn left when I go up the steps, you know. But ultimately, we pay. So not everybody wants the best experience. But if we were a little bit more honest about it, then I think we'd get better results overall, wouldn't we?
Yeah, it's the overall proposition. The example I like is I've got Lidl just up the road from me. And when I was at Sainsbury's, and most of the supermarkets were obsessed with queuing. You know, people won't come here if they queue more than one person, all the rest of it. Well, when I go to Lidl, I think I'm almost always sixth or seventh in the queue, right? So I worked in a business where we were obsessed with queuing and said, you know, one in front, you know, can't have more than one in front. And all the rest of it. And here's a proposition where you can be sixth or seventh, right? But a couple of things are really interesting. One, when it gets to that, they almost always open another till. So you feel like they're trying. Two, the whole proposition means because you're getting cheaper price to your EasyJet, probably more Ryanair, example, you kind of think, well, okay, I'm getting this massive basket for this price, I'm probably going to accept queuing. But I can tell you now, every person I've met at Lidl has been so helpful, kind, open, friendly, that goes away, right? They always say, how are you? And they get through the things quickly, and it's a really pleasant experience. So you've got to take everything in the round. You can't just take one little small factor. There's a queue. Yeah, there's a queue. But actually, the people are nice. I'm getting the food I want at the price I want. And actually, therefore, my overall experience is good.
Yeah. Yeah, really good points. So, I mean, looking at the other areas of sort of, you know, significance, I mean, there's a lot that you've done, but, you know, you're an inspirational role model and someone who's spoken, you know, on many platforms about the requirement to see more people of colour in key leadership roles. So, and I know you advocate to believe it, you must see it, you know. So can you talk a little bit more about that?
Yeah, I think role modelling is super important. And maybe I didn't always, right, but I do now. And I think if we're ever going to get to a position where we have greater representation or representation in line with our population. So 20% of, broadly speaking, maybe a little bit less on the last census, of the population are people of colour. And but certainly, and in some workforces, that's exactly the same. Sometimes in some places over indexed, but hardly anywhere I've been so far is it in leadership. And actually, if we ever want to change that, we're going to have to make the best of the role models we've got. So that people can see that that is possible. That is possible that I can do that. You know, it's my whole sort of, there's no Coco Gauff without Serena Williams, right? You've got to think, actually, that can be me, you know. And so I know I have a job to do with being, and that's why I'm happy to come on podcasts and do whatever. And so that people can see that it is possible, you know, for a black man to be a CEO of a company or a very senior person in corporate businesses. And I'd like to encourage more of that. And I think young kids need to be also to be able to see that they to remove almost the sort of limiting beliefs or thoughts that maybe that this is the level that people like me can get to, and that is just not true. The talent is everywhere, the intelligence is everywhere, and we've got to encourage it as a country to do better. But actually, the businesses that get it the quickest will do the best.
Yeah, great. And I mean, if we look at your new venture in that respect, Elevate Colour, and, you know, if you're talking and looking at other CEOs and COOs and business leaders, that, as you say, you know, there is massive underrepresentation when we look at this level of leadership, if not even the level below, really. What do you think that needs to be done or they can do to help get greater representation of people of colour in all levels of leadership across the businesses? And I guess, how do they keep them as well? Because, you know, as you say, if we look at the lower end of the sort of business and sort of roles, they probably have got a generally good representation mix, but they just don't stay. That, you know, we're losing them all, aren't we, as they go through the ranks?
Yeah, you know, so super complex question. Let me try.
Yeah, I know.
Answer it quickly. I think that the first organisations a bit. There is a mass. The reason I'm sort of comfortable with moving between the customer stuff to the diversity stuff is because there's a real read across. Mm. Like one of the read across is in the same way I said for customers, companies have to really want to do it.
Yeah.
Right. They have to really want to do it, because you can't pay lip service to it. Nothing will happen if you pay lip service to it. You've got to be intentional about making the change. We really need this to happen, right? And you know, maybe targets or whatever, but actually from the top down, this is a thing we care about, and we're going to be intentional about making it better, right? We're going to understand our data. Like lost companies don't know the answer to the question, yeah. Right? And I know there's lots of, because of the way the data is around ethnicity, there are challenges in that, but lean into the challenges, understand your data, and set yourself some goals, if you want to call them, where you can move the organization to intentionally, right? And then I think we've got to lean into the fact that there are, from the population, there might be issues with selection and promotion and all of that sort of thing, and that has to be addressed. But more than anything else, the whole organization just needs to be culturally ready for it. So I think what's happened in lots of places is people thought, well, we'll just, and you probably know more about this, I mean, we're just going to go and recruit people of colour into roles because that will just help us fix the problem. But I've yet to find a place where that has worked on its own, right? Because the environment and the culture is not right for the people who are being recruited in. So, yeah, we're going to get these people in, and there's some challenges in that, but, you know, won't go into that. Let's say that happens, but the environment, just remember, there's nothing greater than culture in a business, in life generally, right? So if the culture is not ready to accept that, then they often will leave. They won't be successful. So I think organizations have to be intentional, create the culture that will allow people of color to thrive, to survive first, and then to thrive. And then they've got to, I believe, create pipelines of talent pipelines in order to get there. And actually, you know, what we're going to try and do is also work with schools and school leavers, because the pipeline starts right at the bottom, right? You know, I'd love eventually to be making sure we're getting the right thoughts into primary school kids, because it's there they need to be thinking, I could be a CEO, I could be a senior person. You want them to start there, you know, so by the time they're deciding what exams to do and all the rest of it later in life, they've got that sort of in their brain. So, you know, long term, that would be amazing if we were doing that.
Yeah, I think that's a really good point you make about the children, because again, I think there was some recent research that came out that said, you know, if a teacher believes in a child that and tells them they're going to be good at maths, versus a teacher that tells the same child that they're not no good at maths and they'll never amount to anything, the same child will outperform based on the belief that they're good at maths versus the, yeah. that's told that they're not. And so that's true, isn't it? You know, if they've got these people telling them it's accessible to them, perhaps some of it is mindset and, you know, the fact that they believe it and they can, as you say, they see it rather than perhaps, you know, you go into a business and you go, oh, this just isn't ever going to happen. It can't happen because, you know, this is against me. So it's really that influence, that power of influence at such a young age is probably a really sort of important, well, it is a really important point that you made.
It's huge. It's huge. You know, and I feel blessed by the fact that my kids can think automatically that they're going to go to university because their mum and dad did, and you know that they can be an accountant or a CEO or a CF or a COO because they see it around them, right? They are privileged, right? And they're able, but there's many just as able as them who don't get that. They don't get that. They don't get that reinforcement from their teachers or even their parents, right? That they can actually go and do that because they don't know either. So there's a real role. That's like it's a big loop, right? Back to role modeling right at the top, which is, hey, look at all these amazing people and what they've achieved. Yep. And you could be that in 10 years or 20 years or 30 years. Yep. You know, you really, really can.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think the other point you made is absolutely true. You know, the recruitment side of things, the talent acquisition is a real problem. You know, I speak to so many people that don't even get people on the long lists. The long lists, goodness me, that 100, 200 people, you know, and let alone the short lists. And we know that with the short lists, if you only have one person, whether it be of a person of colour or a female, they will not, I think it's something like 80%+, they will not get the role, you know, because you have to have that representation, you have to have that mix, and you know there's a real, I'd say, you know, a real issue there. And then, as you also said, when they hire them, the problem is the business just continues as normal and doesn't make any adjustments for the fact that, you know, let's mentor, let's make this person correct. Feel comfortable, you know, let's see what we need to do. It's sort of, you hire them for one reason and then you go, right, you're here now, we behave like this, we are this, you behave like this, and the inclusion element is just lost. So there's again some really great points that you make in that question or response.
You know, I completely agree. I couldn't agree more. But there's a lot to do. There's a lot to unpick. And when there's a lot to unpick, then the drive has to be, as I said, intentional and from the top. Otherwise, it doesn't work, right? There's just no way that can work, you know, and it won't work, right? But change, I think I posted to them, change is hard.
Yeah.
Right. Change is super hard. And also generally long term. Happens over a long term. So I think everyone's got to be realistic about how quickly you can make your workforce really, really sustainably diverse. Especially your leadership population. And what I mean sustainably, I think in the short term you can, as I said, by just hiring people. But what we just talked about is making it sustainable for the long term. You know, that needs an awful lot more work.
Yeah, excellent. Okay. So, I mean, and if we do look at aspirational talent, let's say, you know, and maybe they haven't had that early interjection of being told it's possible or what is possible. I mean, what advice would you give to help them make, a corporate career work for them, if, of course, that's what they want to do?
Yeah, I think I presented to a Black talent group on Monday, and it was good, it was great, and the same question came up, and I kind of focused on three things. I think I called the first thing be lucky. What do you mean be lucky? People sort of say, wow, you've been so lucky in your career, and I'm like, I have, right? But then when you think about it, luck definitely exists. You know, people say there's no such thing as luck. I don't subscribe to that. There is a thing as called luck. I'm sure you've had it. I've definitely had it and thought, wow, that was a lucky break. But actually, when I thought about it, I've got this sort of concept of the surface area of luck. You can make the chances of luck happening to you bigger, right, is my point, right? Because luck exists, and some people are luckier than others because they create an environment where luck's more likely to happen to them, right? And in a business context, I think that is one around network and connections, right? and how people feel about you as an individual, right? If you're a nice person and you make lots of friends in lots of places, you have a lot of people who will advocate for you in the long run, right? And the second is hard work and talent. You know, I put them together because actually hard work beats talent if talent doesn't work hard, right?
Yeah.
So actually, if you know and like and get lots of connections and create a network and you work hard and you're talented, guess what? If you're in the top corner of that, you're more lucky, right? And actually, luck is what drives lots of senior people and successful people will say, oh, that thing happened. That was amazing that happened. But actually, reality, they have made that happen by something like that. So one, be lucky and you can make yourself more likely to be lucky. Second, I said, be a sponge. And what does that mean? Adam Grant, who's a psychologist. Do you know Adam?
Do you know him, but he writes books. Yeah. I don't think I've read his work. I'm not sure.
He's amazing. So he's brilliant. Listen to his podcast. Yeah. Read his books. The guy is incredible. And his last book is a book called Hidden Potential. And in that book, he says something that I was like, wow, that makes sense. I've been speaking 25 years that he's trying to understand it, and he's articulated, which is how some of the best people are like sponges. And he says sponges again on two axes. One is people who are proactive learners. They go out of their way to learn stuff, right? They don't wait to go on the course or for the opportunity. They go and make those things happen for themselves. And Michelle, you'll know about this because you might not have articulated, but you've seen so many people in your recruitment work. So people who are proactive, they go out of their way, they listen to podcasts, they read books, they read articles, they're learning all the time. They're doing it themselves, not waiting for someone else to do it for them, right? So that's on the one hand. And on the second hand, it's about growth mindset. They are happy to not know, but to learn. Right, knowing that actually they might not be able to do it. I say to the kids, you can't do that yet. That's the way I define growth mindset. You know, I can't do it now. I'm going to learn, and then I'll be able to do it. And again, if you can over-index on both those things, is what he calls a sponge, or just a fairy. But that's an amazing. If you can be that person, a proactive learner who's always trying to make it work for themselves, and has a mindset that says, I don't know now. Right, but I'm comfortable with that.
Yeah.
But I will, you know. So be a sponge. And the last thing I said was about this thing about keep showing up. You know, you saw my JC post. The thing that he talks about is important. Is a career is super hard, right? And you will have bumps along the way. We all do, right? But the people that make it, the people that you can call it resilience if you want, that keep showing up. They keep showing up no matter what the bumps and the disappointments and the letdowns are. They don't blame it on something else. They internalize it and they keep going and they keep showing up and they keep showing up. And I said, if you keep showing up and keep showing up, in the end, you'll get the reward that your hard work and your talents and your skills deserve. You just have to believe that.
Yeah. Yeah, those are really fantastic points. I could talk to you all day on each of them, really. But I mean, you're right. I speak to so many people and all levels, you know, obviously a lot of senior directors, and the amount of people that put barriers in their way at that level even, and you know, the amount of them as well, they haven't got all the answers. None of us have, you know, but it's just having that confidence to turn up and be aware that, you know, okay, I might not know, but I'll learn. And also, as you say, putting yourself out there. Again, I speak to so many people who hold themselves back and just won't, oh, I don't want to post, oh, I don't want to reach out to that person. And you just like, but and as you say, the harder you work, the more you do, the luckier you get. So I'm, you know, really, really powerful points.
Yeah, no, I really, really, it's they seem three simple points, and it's taken me probably 30 years to get to them. But I'm there now, and I think if you can follow those, pretty much, you know, you'll get pretty much. I generally think in a career stuff, people get what they deserve, right? And my favorite saying is, if I don't know who said it, but I love it. if you think you can or you think you can't, you're probably right.
Yeah, true. A very true point. Okay, so you've worked with us a number of times over a number of years, Oki. So, I mean, I would be interested in your thoughts. You know, about myself and Douglas Jackson. Are you sort of happy to share those?
Are you happy for me to share them? It's most important.
Yeah.
I can cut it out of the video. Yeah, exactly. That's a good point. You know, if this video suddenly jumps to me saying thanks at the end, you know what the feedback was. Well, I've probably known you a long time now. I believe that there are brilliant generalists and there are brilliant specialists, right? And, you know, I think Douglas Jackson are a brilliant specialist. They know the market, they know it well, they know the people in the market, which is great, but they're not just throwing through the same people all the time. You know, you guys are always reaching out to, you know, I haven't always seen the same candidates all the time.
Yeah.
And I've had some amazing people come work for me from Douglas Jackson. I mean, I'm sure it's not worked maybe once or twice, but it's hard for me to think about when those were. What stands out are the people, the amazing people I've worked with who have come through your organization. And I'm not going to name names, but I could reel off names. And so, you know, and that comes from, as I said, knowing what you're doing and knowing that market. But also, you know, there's a good level of trust in there. You know, I think trust is the most important commodity, maybe in the whole of the world. You know, I was just going to talk about the trust between the humans is incredibly important, you know, and in a business context, it's incredibly important that you basically can trust an organization to do what it says, you know. If I had to bring another word out, it would be trust, you know. For customer experience between companies, whatever. I kind of trust Douglas Jackson to deliver whenever I need them.
Oh, that's really nice of you. Thank you so much for saying that. And it does, you know, our job is made an awful lot easier by the people that we work with, you know, so it goes right back to you. You know, there's lots of leaders that we work with who are fantastic. And you know, as you say, you have that relationship with them. And when that's not there, it makes our job so much harder. And we love working with, you know, people like yourself and hiring great leaders. And it, as I say, it just makes it better. But thank you. Thank you for that. So is there anything else you want to end on, you know, how can people help you in your new venture? How can people get in touch? What can we sort of help you with, Oki?
Yeah, well, you know, we're setting off on this journey of Elevate Colour, which has been super exciting so far in the 6 weeks that we've been doing it. And we're making really, really great progress. We're still setting up our fundamental stuff, but if people want to reach out and hear more about what we're doing in the story, you know, they reach out to me on LinkedIn. I'm just Oki Elazer on LinkedIn. Also email me at oki@elevatecolour.org. Happy to talk to people here, get their insights. We're moving forward fast, but also fact-finding at the same time. We're literally running and chewing gum and patting our stomach at the same time, which is the way I like it. So all views, thoughts, really, really welcome.
Fabulous. And I'll make sure that obviously your contact details go on this video, so it's very easy for people to contact you. So that's brilliant. I mean, I really, really appreciate it. I know we're running out of time, but, you know, thank you so much for sharing your thoughts and insights. And I know it'll resonate with a lot of our audience. So I really appreciate you taking the time, Oki.
Pleasure. Always good to be here. I look forward to doing it again in a year or 2 years or however long it takes to invite someone back.
Progressing. Absolutely. And good luck with Elevate Colour.
Thank you.